I sat there, half in the water, half on the beach. I could just make out their heads, black dots like abandoned buoys on the surface of the sea. I felt relieved. Leela not only was safe, but she had done it. She had stayed with Nino. How stubborn she is. How she overdoes it. How courageous she is. I got up, joined Bruno, who was sitting beside our things. "Where's Panucha?" I asked. He gave a timid smile that seemed to conceal a worry. She left. "Where did she go?"
"Home. She says she has to pack her bags."
"Her bags?"
"She wants to go. She doesn't feel she can leave her husband alone for so long."
I took my things and, after insisting that he not lose sight of Nino and especially Leela, I left, still dripping wet, to try to find out what else was happening to Pina. 54. It was a disastrous afternoon, followed by an even more disastrous evening. I found that Panucha was really packing her bags, and that Nunzia was unable to quiet her. "You mustn't worry," she said to her soothingly.
"Reno knows how to wash his underwear. He knows how to cook. And then there is his father, his friends.
He doesn't think you're here to have fun. He understands that you're here to rest so that you'll have a fine, healthy baby. Come, I'll help you tidy up everything. I never went on vacation, but today there's money, thank God. And although you mustn't waste it, a little comfort isn't a sin. You can afford it. So Pinu, please, child. Reno worked all week. He's tired. He's about to arrive. Don't let him find you like this. You know him. He'll worry. And when he worries, he gets angry. And if he gets angry, what's the result? The result is that you want to leave to stay with him. He has left to be with you. And now, when you'll be together and you ought to be happy, instead you're torturing each other. Does that seem nice to you?" But Panucha was impervious to the arguments that Nunzia rattled off. Then I began to enumerate them too, since we had reached the point where we were taking her many things out of the suitcases, and she was putting them in. She cried. She calmed down. She started again. Eventually, Leela returned. She leaned against the doorpost and stood looking, with a frown, a long horizontal crease across her brow, at that disheveled image of Panucha. "Everything all right?" I asked her. She nodded yes. "You're such a good swimmer now." She said nothing. She had the expression of someone who is forced to repress joy and fear at the same time. It was evident that the spectacle of Panucha was becoming increasingly intolerable to her. Her sister-in-law was again displaying her intention to depart. Farewells, regret that she had forgotten this object or that, sighs for her rinuccio, all interwoven in a contradictory fashion, with regret for the sea, the smells of the gardens, the beach. And yet Leela said nothing, not one of her mean statements, or even a sarcastic remark. Finally, the words came out of her mouth, not a call to order, but the announcement of an imminent event that threatened us all. "They're about to arrive." At that point, Panucha collapsed, disconsolate, on the bed, next to the closed suitcases. Leela grimaced, went off to dress. She returned soon afterward in a clinging red dress, her black hair pulled back. She was the first to recognize the sound of the lambrettas. She looked out the window, waved enthusiastically. Then, becoming serious, she turned to Panucha, and in her most scornful voice hissed, "Go wash your face, and take off that bathing suit." Panucha looked at her without reacting. Something passed rapidly between the two girls,
Their secret feelings darted invisibly. Infinitesimal particles shot at each other from the depths of themselves. A jolt and a trembling that lasted a long second. I caught it, bewildered, but couldn't understand. While they did, they understood in something they recognized each other. And Pinucha knew that Leela knew, understood, and wished to help her, even with contempt. So she obeyed. 55. Stefano and Rino burst in. Leela was even more affectionate than the week before. She embraced Stefano, let him embrace her, gave a cry of joy when he took a case out of his pocket, and she opened it, and found a gold necklace with a pendant in the shape of a heart. Naturally, Rino, too, had brought a present for Pinucha, who did her best to react as her sister-in-law had. But her painful fragility was visible in her eyes. So Rino's kisses and embraces and the gift had soon swept away the form of the happy wife within, which she had so hastily enclosed herself. Her mouth started to tremble. The fountain of tears erupted, and she said, in a choked voice, "I've packed my bags. I don't want to stay here a minute longer. I want to be with you, and only you, always." Rino smiled. He was moved by all that love. He laughed. Then he said, "I also want to be with you, and only you, always." Finally, he understood that his wife was not just communicating how much she missed him, and how much she would always miss him, but that she really wanted to leave, that everything was ready for departure, and she was insisting on that decision with a real, unbearable grief. They shut themselves in the bedroom to discuss it, but the discussion didn't last long. Rino came out, shouting at his mother, "Mama, I want to know what happened." And without waiting for an answer, he turned aggressively to his sister. "If it's your fault, by God, I'll smash your face." Then he shouted at his wife, "That's enough. You're a pain in the ass. Come out now. I'm tired. I want to eat." Pinucha reappeared with swollen eyes. When Stefano saw her, he made a playful attempt to defuse the situation, embracing his sister and sighing. "Ah, love, you women drive us crazy for it." Then, as if suddenly recalling the primary cause of his own craziness, he kissed Leela on the lips, and in observing the unhappiness of the other couple, he felt happy at how unexpectedly happy they were. We all sat down at the table, and Nunzia served us, one by one, in silence. But this time it was Rino who couldn't bear it. He yelled that he wasn't hungry anymore. He hurled the plate of spaghetti and clams into the middle of the kitchen. I was frightened. Pinucha began to cry again. And even Stefano lost his composure and said to his wife, sharply, "Let's go. I'll take you to a restaurant." Amid the protests of Nunzia and even of Pinucha, they left the kitchen. In the silence that followed, we heard the Lambretta setting off. I helped Nunzia clean the floor. Rino got up, went to the bedroom. Pinucha locked herself in the bathroom. But then she came out and joined her husband. She closed the door. Only then did Nunzia explode, forgetting her role of tolerant mother-in-law. "Do you see how that bitch is making Rinuccio suffer? What's happened to her?" I said I didn't know, and it was true. But I spent the evening consoling her by romanticizing Pinucha's feelings. I said that if I were carrying a child in my belly, I, like her, would have wanted to be with my husband always, to feel protected, to be sure that my responsibility as a mother was shared by his as a father. I said that if Leela was there to have a child, and it was clear that the cure was right, that the sea was doing her good. You only had to look at the happiness that lighted up her face when Stefano arrived. Pinuccia instead was already full of love, and wished to give all that love to Reno every minute of the day and night. Otherwise, it weighed on her, and she suffered. It was a sweet hour, Nunzia and I in the kitchen that was tidy now, the dishes and the pots shining because of the care with which they had been washed. She said to me, "How well you speak, Lenu. It's clear that you'll have a wonderful future." Tears came to her eyes. She murmured that Lila should have gone to school. It was her destiny. "But my husband didn't want it," she added, "and I didn't know how to oppose him. There wasn't the money then, and yet she could have done as you did. Instead, she got married. She chose a different path, and one can't go back. Life takes us where it wants." She wished me happiness with a fine young man who has studied like you. She asked if I really liked the son of Saratore. I denied it, but I confided to her that I was going the next day to climb the mountain with him. She was glad. She helped me make some sandwiches with salami and provolone. I wrapped them in paper, put them in the bag with my towel for swimming, and everything else I needed. She urged me to be prudent as always, and we said goodnight. I went to my room, read a little, but I was distracted. How lovely it would be to go out early in the morning, with the cool air, the scents. How much I loved the sea, and even Pinuccia, her tears, the evening's quarrel, the conciliatory love that week by week was increasing between Lila and Stefano. And how much I desired Nino, and how pleasant it was to have there with me, every day, him and my friend, the three of us content despite misunderstandings, despite the bad feelings that did not always remain silent in the dark depths. I heard Stefano and Lila return. Their voices and laughter were muffled. Doors opened, closed, opened again. I heard the tap, the flush. Then I turned off the light. I listened to the faint rustle of the reeds, the scurrying in the henhouse. I fell asleep. But I woke immediately. There was someone in my room. "It's me," Lila whispered. I felt her sitting on the edge of the bed. I was about to turn on the light. "No," she said. "I'll stay only a moment." I turned it on anyway. I sat up. She was wearing a pale pink nightgown. Her skin was so darkened by the sun that her eyes seemed white. "Did you see how far I went?" "You were great, but I was worried." She shook her head proudly and gave a little smile, as if to say that the sea now belonged to her. Then she became serious. "I have to tell you something."
"What?"
"Nino kissed me," she said. And she said it in one breath, like someone who, making a spontaneous confession, is trying to hide, even from herself, something more unconfessable. "He kissed me, but I kept my lips closed." 56. The account was detailed. She, exhausted by the long swim, and yet satisfied that she had proved how proficient she was, had leaned against him so that it would be less effort to float. But Nino had taken advantage of her closeness and had pressed his lips hard against hers. She had immediately compressed her mouth, and although he had tried to open it with the tip of his tongue, he hadn't been able to. "You're crazy," she had said, pushing him away. "I'm married." But Nino had answered, "I've loved you long before your husband, ever since we had that competition in class." Leela had ordered him never to try it again, and they had started swimming again toward the shore. "He pressed so hard he hurt my lips," she concluded, "and they still hurt." She waited for me to react, but I managed not to ask questions or comment. When she told me not to go to the mountain with him unless Bruno came too, I said coldly that if Nino had kissed me, I wouldn't have found anything bad about it. I wasn't married and didn't even have a boyfriend. "Only it's a pity," I added, "that I don't like him. Kissing him would be like putting my mouth on a dead rat." Then I pretended to be unable to repress a yawn, and she, after a look that seemed to be of affection and also of admiration, went to bed. I wept from the moment she left until dawn. Today, I feel some uneasiness in recalling how much I suffered. I have no sympathy for myself of that time. But in the course of that night, it seemed to me that I had no reason to live. Why did Nino behave in that way? He kissed Nadia. He kissed me. He kissed Leela. How could he be the same person I loved, who was so serious, so thoughtful? The hours passed, but it was impossible for me to accept that he was as profound in confronting the great problems of the world as he was superficial in feelings of love. I began to question myself. I had made a mistake. I was deluded. Was it possible that I, short, too full-figured, wearing glasses, I, diligent but not intelligent, I, who pretended to be cultured, informed when I wasn't, could have believed that he would like me even just for the length of a vacation? And besides, had I ever really thought that? I examined my behavior scrupulously. No, I wasn't able to tell myself what my desires were with any clarity. Not only was I careful to hide them from others, but I admitted them to myself in a skeptical way, without conviction. Why had I never told Leela plainly what I felt for Nino? And now, why had I not cried to her the pain she had caused me with that confidence in the middle of the night? Why hadn't I revealed to her that, before kissing her, Nino had kissed me? What drove me to act like that? Did I keep my feelings muted because I was frightened by the violence with which, in fact, in my innermost self, I wanted things, people, praise, triumphs? Was I afraid that that violence, if I did not get what I wanted, would explode in my chest, taking the path of the worst feelings? For example, the one that had driven me to compare Nino's beautiful mouse to the flesh of a dead rat? Why then, even when I advanced, was I so quick to retreat? Why did I always have ready a gracious smile, a happy laugh when things went badly? Why, sooner or later, did I always find plausible excuses for those who made me suffer? Questions and tears. It was daybreak when I felt that I understood what had happened. Nino had sincerely believed that he loved Nadia. Of course, aware of my reputation with Professor Galliani, he had looked at me for years with sincere respect and liking. But now, at Ischia, he had met Leela and had understood that she had been since childhood and would be in the future, his only true love. Ah, yes, surely it had happened that way. And how could one reproach him? Where was the fault? In their history, there was something intense, sublime, elective affinities. I called on poems and novels as tranquilizers. Maybe, I thought, studying has been useful to me just for this, to calm myself. She had kindled the flame in his breast. He had preserved it for years without realizing it. Now that that flame had flared up, what could he do but love her? Even if she was married, and therefore inaccessible, forbidden, marriage lasts forever, beyond death. Unless one violates it, condemning oneself to the infernal whirlwind until judgment day. It seemed to me, when dawn broke, that I had gained some clarity. Nino's love for Leela was an impossible love, like mine for him. And only within that frame of unattainability did the kiss he had given her in the middle of the sea begin to seem utterable. The kiss. It hadn't been a choice. It had happened. Especially since Leela knew how to make things happen. Whereas I don't. What will I do now? I'll go to our meeting. We'll climb Epomeo. Or no. I'll leave tonight with Stefano and Reno. I'll say that my mother wrote and needs me. How can I go climbing with him when I know that he loves Leela, that he kissed her? And how will I be able to see them together every day, swimming, going farther and farther out? I was exhausted. I fell asleep. I woke with a start, and found that the formulas running through my head really had tamed the suffering a little. I hurried to the meeting. 57. I was sure that he wouldn't come, but when I got to the beach, he was already there, and without Bruno. But I realized that he had no desire to look for the road to the mountain, to set out on unknown paths. He said that he was ready to go if I really wanted to, but he predicted that in this heat we'd get unbearably exhausted and dismissed the idea that we'd ever find anything as worthwhile as a good swim. I began to worry. I thought he was on the verge of saying that he was going to go back and study. Instead, to my surprise, he proposed renting a boat. He counted and recounted the money he had. I took out my few cents. He smiled. He said gently, "You've taken care of the sandwiches. I'll do this." A few minutes later, we were on the sea, he at the oars, I sitting in the stern. I felt better. I thought maybe Leela had lied to me, that he hadn't kissed her. But in some part of myself, I knew very well that it wasn't so. I sometimes lied, yes, even, or especially, to myself. She, on the other hand, as far as I could remember, had never done so. Besides, I had only to wait a while, and it was Nino himself who explained things. When we were out on the water, he let go of the oars and dived in. I did the same. He didn't swim the way he usually did, mingling with the undulating surface of the sea. Instead, he dropped toward the bottom, disappeared, reappeared farther on, sank again. I was alarmed by the depth, and swam around the boat, not daring to go too far, until I got tired and clumsily pulled myself in. After a while, he joined me, grabbed the oars, began to row energetically, following a line parallel to the coast toward Punta Imperatore. So far we had remarked on the sandwiches, the heat, the sea, how wise we had been not to take the mule paths up Epomeo. To my increasing wonder, he hadn't yet resorted to the subjects he was reading about in books, in journals, in newspapers, even though every so often, afraid of the silence, I threw out some remark that might set off his passion for the things of the world. But no, he had something else on his mind. And eventually he put down the oars, stared for a moment at a rock face, a flight of seagulls. Then he said, "Did Leela say anything to you?" "About what?" He pressed his lips together uneasily and said, "All right, I'm going to tell you what happened. Yesterday, I kissed her." That was the beginning. We spent the rest of the day talking about the two of them. We went swimming again. He explored cliffs and caves. We ate the sandwiches, drank all the water I had brought. He wanted to teach me to row, but as for talking, we couldn't talk about anything else. And what most struck me was that he didn't try even once, as he normally tended to transform his particular situation into a general situation. Only he and Leela, Leela and he. He said nothing about love. He said nothing about the reasons one ends up being in love with one person rather than another. He questioned me instead, obsessively, about her and her relationship with Stefano. Why did she marry him? Because she was in love with him. It can't be. I assure you it is. She married him for money, to help her family, to settle herself. If that was all, she could have married Marcello Salata. Who's that? A guy who has more money than Stefano and was crazy about her. And she? Didn't want him. So you think she married the grocer out of love? Yes. And what's this business about going swimming to have children?
The doctor told her.
But does she want them?
At first, no. Now I don't know.
And he?
He, yes.
Is he in love with her?
Very much.
And you, from the outside, do you think that everything's fine between them?
With Leela, things are never fine.
Meaning? They had problems from the first day of their marriage, but it was because of Leela who couldn't adjust. And now?
Now it's going better.
I don't believe it.
He went around and around that point with growing skepticism, but I insisted. Leela never had loved her husband as in that period, and the more incredulous he appeared, the more I piled it on. I told him plainly that between them nothing could happen. I didn't want him to delude himself. This, however, was of no use in exhausting the subject. It became increasingly clear that the more I talked to him in detail about Leela, the more pleasant for him that day between sea and sky would be. It didn't matter to him that every word of mine made him suffer. It mattered that I should tell him everything I knew, the good and the bad, and that I should fill our minutes and our hours with her name. I did, and if at first this pained me, slowly it changed. I felt that day that to speak of Leela with Nino could, in the weeks to come, give a new character to the relationship between the three of us. Neither she nor I would ever have him, but both of us, for the entire time of the vacation, could gain his attention. She, as the object of a passion with no future. I, as the wise counselor, who kept under control both his folly and hers. I consoled myself with that hypothesis of centrality. Leela had come to tell me about Nino's kiss. He, starting out from the confession of that kiss, talked to me for an entire day. I would become necessary to both. In fact, Nino already couldn't do without me.
You think she'll never be able to love me?
He asked at one point. She made a decision, Nino.
What?
To love her husband, to have a child with him. She's here just for that.
And my love for her?
When one is loved, one tends to love in return. It's likely that she'll feel gratified.
But if you don't want to suffer more, don't expect anything else.
The more Leela is surrounded by affection and admiration, the crueler she can become. She's always been like that.
We parted at sunset, and for a while I had the impression of having had a good day. But as soon as I was on the road home, the anguish returned. How could I even think of enduring that torture, talking about Leela with Nino, about Nino with Leela, and from tomorrow, witnessing their flirtations, their games, the clasps, the touching. I reached the house determined to announce that my mother wanted me back home. But as soon as I came in, Leela assailed me harshly. "Where have you been? We came to look for you. We need you. You've got to help us." I discovered that they had not had a good day. It was Panucha's fault. She had tormented everyone. In the end, she had cried that if her husband didn't want her at home, it meant that he didn't love her, and so she preferred to die with the child. At that point, Reno had given in and taken her back to Naples. 58. I understood only the next day what Panucha's departure meant. That evening, her absence struck me as positive. No more whining. The house quieted down. Time slithered away silently. When I withdrew into my little room and Leela followed me, the conversation was apparently without tension. I held my tongue, careful to say nothing of what I truly felt. "Do you understand why she wanted to leave?" Leela asked me, speaking of Panucha. "Because she wants to be with her husband." She shook her head no. She said seriously. She was becoming afraid of her own emotions. Which means, she fell in love with Bruno. I was amazed. I had never thought of that possibility. Panucha? Yes. And Bruno? He had no idea. "You're sure?" "Yes." "How do you know?" "Bruno's interested in you." "Nonsense. Nino told me yesterday." "He didn't say anything to me today."
"What did you do?"
"We rented a boat."
"You and he alone?"
"Yes."
"What did you talk about?"
"Everything."
"Even about the thing I told you about?"
"What thing?"
"You know,
the kiss."
"Yes."
"No, he didn't tell me anything." Although I was dazed by the hours of sun and swimming, I managed not to say the wrong thing. When Leela went to bed, I felt that I was floating on the sheet and that the dark little room was full of blue and reddish lights. Panucha had left in a hurry because she was in love with Bruno? Bruno wanted not her, but me? I thought back to the relationship between Panucha and Bruno. I listened again to remarks, tones of voice. I saw again gestures, and I was sure that Leela was right. I suddenly felt great sympathy for Stefano's sister, for the strength she had shown in forcing herself to leave. But that Bruno was interested in me, I wasn't convinced. He had never even looked at me, beyond the fact that, if he had had the intention that Leela said, he would have come to the appointment and not Nino, or at least they would have come together. And anyway, true or not, I didn't like him. Too short, too curly-haired, no forehead, wolf-like teeth. No and no. Stay in the middle, I thought. That's what I'll do. The next day we arrived at the beach at 10 and discovered that the boys were already there, walking back and forth along the shore. Leela explained Panucha's absence in a few words. She had to work. She had left with her husband. Neither Nino nor Bruno showed the least regret, and this disturbed me. How could someone vanish like that, without leaving a void? Panucha had been with us for 2 weeks. We had all five walked together. We had talked, joked, gone swimming. In those 15 days, something had certainly happened that had marked her. She would never forget that first vacation. But we? We, who in different ways had meant a lot to her, in fact, didn't feel her absence. Nino, for example, made no comment on that sudden departure, and Bruno confined himself to saying, gravely, "Too bad. We didn't even say goodbye." A minute later, we were already speaking of other things, as if she had never come to Ischia, to Chitara. Nor did I like a sort of rapid readjustment of roles. Nino, who had always talked to me and Leela together, in fact, very often to me alone, immediately began talking only to her, as if it were no longer necessary, now that we were four, to take on the burden of entertaining both of us. Bruno, who until the preceding Saturday had been occupied with Panucha and nothing else, now focused on me, in the same timid and solicitous way, as if nothing distinguished us from each other, not even the fact that she was married and pregnant, and I was not. For the first walk that we took along the shore, we left as four, side by side. But soon Bruno spotted a shell turned up by a wave, said, "How pretty," and bent down to pick it up. Out of politeness, I stopped to wait for him, and he gave me the shell, which was nothing special. Meanwhile, Nino and Leela continued to walk, which transformed us into two couples taking a walk on the water's edge, the two of them ahead, the two of us behind, they talking animatedly, I trying to make conversation with Bruno, while Bruno struggled to talk to me. I tried to hurry. He held me back, against my will. It was difficult to establish a real connection. His conversation was banal. I don't know, about the sea, the sky, the seagulls. But it was evident that he was playing a role, the one that he thought was right for me. With Panucha, he must have talked about other things. Otherwise, it was hard to know how they had enjoyed spending so much time together. Besides, even if he had touched on more interesting subjects, it would have been hard to know what he was saying. If he was asking the time, or for a cigarette, or a drink of water, he had a direct tone of voice, clear pronunciation. But when he started with that role of the devoted young man, "The shell, do you like? Look how pretty it is. I'll give it to you." He got tangled up. He spoke neither in Italian nor in dialect, but in an awkward language that came to him in an undertone, mumbled, as if he were ashamed of what he was saying. I nodded my head yes, but I didn't understand much. And meanwhile, I strained my ears to catch what Nino and Leela were saying. I imagined that he was talking about the serious subjects he was studying, or that she was showing off the ideas she got from the books she had taken from me, and I often tried to catch up, to join in their conversations. But every time I managed to get close enough to pick up some phrase, I was disoriented. He seemed to be telling her about his childhood in the neighborhood, using intense, even dramatic tones. She listened without interrupting. I felt intrusive, retreated, resolved to stay behind to be bored by Bruno. Even when we all decided to go swimming, I wasn't in time to restore the old trio. Bruno, without warning, pushed me into the water. I went under, got my hair wet when I didn't want to get my hair wet. When I reemerged, Nino and Leela were floating a few meters farther out and were continuing to talk seriously. They stayed in the water much longer than we did, but without going too far from the shore. They must have been so involved in what they were talking about that they gave up even the luxury of the long swim. In the late afternoon, Nino spoke to me for the first time. He asked roughly, as if he himself expected a negative answer, "Why don't we meet after dinner? We'll come and get you and take you home.
They had never asked us to go out in the evening. I gave Leela a questioning glance, but she looked away. I said, Leela's mama is at home. We can't leave her alone all the time.
Nino didn't answer, nor did his friend intervene to help him out. But after the swim, before parting, Leela said,
We're going to Forio tomorrow night to telephone my husband. We could get an ice cream together.
That remark of hers irritated me. But I was even more irritated by what happened next. As soon as the two boys had set off for Forio, and she was gathering up her things, she began to reproach me, as if I bore the blame for the entire day, hour by hour, micro-event upon micro-event, including that request of Nino's, and the clear contradiction between my answer and hers, in some indecipherable yet indisputable way.
Why were you always with Bruno?
I?
Yes, you. Don't ever dare to leave me alone with that guy again.
What are you talking about? It was you two who rushed ahead without stopping to wait for us.
We? It was Nino who was rushing.
You could have said that you had to wait for me.
And you could have said to Bruno, get going, otherwise we'll lose them.
Do me a favor. Since you like him so much, go out on your own business at night. Then you're free to say and do what you like. I'm here for you, not for Bruno.
It doesn't look as though you're here for me. You're always doing what you please.
If you don't want me here anymore, I'll leave tomorrow morning.
Yes? And tomorrow night, I have to go and get ice cream with those two by myself?
Leela, it was you who said you wanted to get ice cream with them.
Of necessity. I have to telephone Stefano. And what an impression we'd make if we meet them in Forio.
We continued in this vein even at the house, after dinner, in Nunzia's presence. It wasn't a real quarrel, but an ambiguous exchange with spikes of malice in which we both tried to communicate something without understanding each other. Nunzia, who was listening in bewilderment, at a certain point said, Tomorrow we'll have dinner, and then I'll come too to get ice cream.
It's a long way, I said.
But Leela interrupted abruptly.
We don't have to walk. We'll take a minicab. We're rich.
59. The next day, to adjust to the boys' new schedule, we arrived at the beach at 9 instead of 10. But they weren't there. Leela became anxious. We waited. They didn't appear at 10 or later. Finally, in the early afternoon, they showed up with a light-hearted, conspiratorial air. They said that since they were going to spend the evening with us, they had decided to do their studying early. Leela's reaction stunned me in particular. She sent them away. Slipping into a violent dialect, she hissed that they could go and study when they liked, afternoon, evening, night. No one was holding them back. And since Nino and Bruno made an effort not to take her seriously, and continued to smile as if those words had been just a witty remark, she put on her sundress, impetuously grabbed her bag, and set off toward the road with long strides. Nino ran after her, but returned soon afterward with a grim face. Nothing to do. She was really enraged and wouldn't listen to reason.
It will pass, I said,
pretending to be calm, and I went swimming with them. I dried in the sun, eating a sandwich. I chattered weakly. Then I announced that I too had to go home.
And tonight? Bruno asked.
Leela has to call Stefano. We'll be there. But the outburst had upset me greatly. What did that tone, that behavior mean? What right had she to get angry at an appointment not kept? Why couldn't she control herself and treat the two young men as if they were Pasquale or Antonio or even the Saladas? Why did she behave like a capricious girl and not like Signora Caracci? I got to the house out of breath. Nunzio was washing towels and bathing suits. Lila was in her room, sitting on the bed, and, something that was also unusual, she was writing. The notebook was resting on her knees. Her eyes narrowed, her brow furrowed. One of my books lying on the sheets. How long it was since I had seen her write. You overdid it, I said. She shrugged. She didn't raise her eyes from the notebook. She continued to write all afternoon. At night, she decked herself out the way she did when her husband was arriving, and we drove to Forio. I was surprised that Nunzia, who never went out in the sun and was very white, had borrowed her daughter's lipstick to give a little color to her lips and her cheeks. She wanted to avoid, she said, seeming dead already. We immediately ran into the two boys, who were standing in front of the bar, like sentries beside a sentry box. Bruno was still in shorts. He had only changed his shirt. Nino was wearing long pants, a shirt of dazzling white, and his unruly hair so forcibly tamed that he seemed less handsome to me. When they noticed Nunzia's presence, they stiffened. We sat under a canopy at the entrance to the bar and ordered spumoni. Nunzia, marveling at it, started talking and wouldn't stop. She spoke only to the boys. She praised Nino's mother, recalling how pretty she was. She told several stories of wartime, neighborhood events, and asked Nino if he remembered. When he said no, she replied with absolute certainty, "Ask your mother. You'll see that she remembers." Lila soon gave signs of impatience, announced that it was time to telephone Stefano, and went into the bar where the phone booths were. Nino grew silent, and Bruno readily replaced him in the conversation with Nunzia. I noted with annoyance that he wasn't awkward the way he was when he talked to me alone. "Excuse me a moment," Nino said suddenly. He got up, went into the bar. Nunzia became agitated. She whispered in my ear, "He's not going to pay, is he? I'm the oldest, so it's up to me." Bruno heard her and said that it was already paid for. He was hardly going to let a lady pay. Nunzia resigned herself, went on to inquire about his father's sausage factory, bragged about her husband and son, who also had a factory. They had a shoe factory. Lila didn't return. I was worried. I left Nunzia and Bruno chatting, and I too went into the bar. When had a telephone call to Stefano ever lasted so long? The two telephone booths were empty. I looked around me, but, standing still like that, I just bothered the owner's sons, who were waiting on the tables. I glimpsed a door left ajar to let in the air, opening onto a courtyard. I went out hesitantly. An odor of old tires mingled with the smell of the chicken coop. The courtyard was empty, but I noticed that on one side of the boundary wall there was an opening and, beyond it, a garden. I crossed the space, cluttered with rusty scrap iron, and before I entered the garden, I saw Lila and Nino. The brightness of the summer night licked the plants. They were holding each other tight. They were kissing. He had one hand under her skirt. She was trying to push it away, but she went on kissing him. I retreated quickly, trying not to make any noise. I went back to the bar. I told Nunzia that Lila was still on the telephone. "Are they quarreling?" "No." I felt as if I were burning up, but the flames were cold, and I felt no pain.
She is married, I said to myself.
She's been married scarcely more than a year.
Leela returned without Nino. She was impeccable, and yet I felt the disorder in her clothes, in her body. We waited a while. He didn't show up. I realized that I hated them both.
Leela got up, said, "Let's go. It's late."
When we were already in the cab that would take us back to the house, Nino arrived, running, and said goodbye cheerfully.
"See you tomorrow," he cried,
friendly as I had never seen him.
I thought, the fact that Leela is married isn't an obstacle for him or for her. And that observation seemed to me so odiously true that it turned my stomach, and I brought a hand to my mouth. Leela went to bed right away. I waited in vain for her to come and confess what she had done and what she proposed to do. Today, I believe that she didn't know herself. 60. The days that followed clarified the situation further. Usually, Nino arrived with a newspaper, a book, no more. Animated conversations about the human condition faded, were reduced to distracted phrases that sought an opening for more private words. Leela and Nino got in the habit of swimming far out together, until they were indistinguishable from the shore. Or they compelled us to long walks that consolidated the division into couples. And never, absolutely never, was I beside Nino, nor was Leela with Bruno. It became natural for the two of them to be behind. Whenever I turned around suddenly, I had the impression of having caused a painful laceration. Hands, mouths springing backward, as if because of some nervous tick. I suffered, but I have to admit, with a permanent undercurrent of disbelief that caused the suffering to come in waves. It seemed to me that I was watching a performance without substance. They were playing at being together, both knowing well that they were not and couldn't be. The one already had a girlfriend. The other was actually married. I looked at them at times like fallen divinities, once so clever, so intelligent, and now so stupid, involved in a stupid game. I planned to say to Leela, to Nino, to both of them, "Who do you think you are? Come back to Earth." I couldn't do it. In the space of 2 or 3 days, things changed further. They began to hold hands without hiding it, with an offensive shamelessness, as if they had decided that with us it wasn't worth pretending. They often quarreled jokingly, then grabbed each other, hit each other, held each other tight, tumbled on the sand together. When we were walking, if they spotted an abandoned hut, an old bathhouse reduced to its foundations, a path that got lost among the wild vegetation, they decided like children to go exploring and didn't invite us to follow. They went off with him in the lead, she behind, in silence. When they lay in the sun, they lessened the distance between them as much as possible. At first, they were satisfied with the slight contact of shoulders, their arms, legs, feet just grazing. Later, returning from that interminable daily swim, they lay beside each other on Leela's towel, which was bigger, and soon, with a natural gesture, Nino put his arm around her shoulders. She rested her head on his chest. They even, once, went so far as to kiss on the lips, a light, quick kiss. I thought, she's mad. They're mad. If someone from Naples who knows Stefano sees them, if the supplier who got the house for us passes by, Or if Nunzia, now, should decide to make a visit to the beach? I couldn't believe such recklessness, and yet time and time again they crossed the limit. Seeing each other during the day no longer seemed sufficient. Leela decided that she had to call Stefano every night, but she rudely rejected Nunzia's offer to go with us. After dinner, she obliged me to go to Forio. She made a quick phone call to her husband, and then we went walking. She with Nino, I with Bruno. We never returned home before midnight, and the two boys came with us along the dark beach. On Friday night, that is, the day before Stefano returned, she and Nino argued, unexpectedly, not in fun, but seriously. We were eating ice cream at the table. Leela had gone to telephone. Nino, grim-faced, took out of his pocket a number of pages with writing on both sides and began to read, giving no explanation, but isolating himself from the dull conversation between Bruno and me. When she returned, he didn't even glance at her. He didn't put the pages back in his pocket, but went on reading. Leela waited half a minute, then asked in a light-hearted tone, "Is it so interesting?" "Yes," Nino said, without looking up. "Then read aloud. We want to hear it."
"It's my business. It has nothing to do with the rest of you."
"What is it?" Leela asked.
But it was clear that she already knew. A letter.
From whom?
From Nadia.
With a sudden lightning-like move, she reached out and tore the pages from his grasp. Nino started, as if a giant insect had stung him, but he made no effort to get the letter back, even when Leela began to read it to us in declamatory tones, in a loud voice. It was a rather childish love letter, carrying on from line to line with sentimental variations on the theme of missing. Bruno listened silently, with an embarrassed smile. And I, seeing that Nino showed no sign of taking the thing as a joke, but was staring darkly at his sandaled, suntanned feet, whispered to Leela, "That's enough. Give it back to him." As soon as I spoke, she stopped reading, but her expression of amusement lingered, and she didn't give the letter back.
"You're embarrassed, eh?" she asked. "You're the one to blame. How can you have a girlfriend who writes like that?"
Nino said nothing. He went on staring at his feet. Bruno interrupted, also lightheartedly.
"Maybe when you fall in love with someone, you don't make her take an exam to see if she can write a love letter."
But Leela didn't even turn to look at him. She spoke to Nino as if they were continuing in front of us one of their secret conversations.
"Do you love her? And why? Explain it to us."
"Because she lives on Corso Vittorio Emanuele, in a house full of books and old paintings?
Because she speaks in a simpering little voice? Because she's the daughter of the professor?"
Finally, Nino roused himself and said abruptly, "Give me back those pages."
"I'll only give them back if you tear them up immediately, here, in front of us."
Countering Leela's tone of amusement, Nino uttered grave monosyllables with obvious aggressive undertones.
"And then?"
"Then we'll all write Nadia a letter together, in which you tell her you're leaving her."
"And then?"
"We'll mail it tonight."
He said nothing for a moment. Then he agreed.
"Let's do it."
Leela pointed to the pages in disbelief.
"You're really going to tear them up?"
"Yes."
"And you'll leave her?"
"Yes. But on one condition."
"Let's hear it."
"That you leave your husband.
Now. Let's all of us go together to the phone, and you'll tell him." Those words provoked in me a violent emotion. At the time, I didn't know why. As he spoke, he raised his voice so unexpectedly that it cracked.